There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Ah, France and its deep history. Its markets du fish, the smoking, la baguette. Ah, toujours. Ah, l'amour. Ah. What better backdrop could there be for a bit of merder? And what could be more French than a little merder?
Zut alors.
Or wait, is that British? Anyway, we continue our little escapade this week. And why? 'Cause it's good for you, that is why. Here we look at films that are part of the Criterion Collection or on the Criterion Channel, or both, as they are the crème de la crème du ciné. It must be so. It says so in the box. And this week, a French film with French people in it, speaking French, and it takes place in, well, Italy. Still, French! It's Purple Noon, an adaptation of the novel Le Talented Mr. Ripley. This one stars French superstar Alain Delon. Last heard about in this show back on the episode about La Samurai. Is it really good? Or are we just told it is good? Well, to decide that, we have the master of French culture, ambassador du fromage, Max Tutsuit Levine. Give us a whistle, Max.
Guten Tag, mein Herren und meine Damen.
I cannot believe you messed this up so badly. Le fired.
Oh, le merde.
And me? Whatever do I matter. I am just that mon petit to his cabage, Mike. I'm not a Frenchie, I'm a Belgie, loose. But, enough about us. Actually, I am a Belgian, which is the weird part. It's time to hear all the answers to our
poll question.
Last week, the question was, what is your favorite movie about journalism? We had some really good answers, and here's some now.
Ooh.
On the website, we have Vince, Snowman, Slushy, Werner Herzog Jr., our favorite Canadian, who wrote, quote, I suppose Citizen Kane is technically a film about a journalist finding out about a famous man, but it doesn't quite say journalism movie to me. Really? His Girl Friday, however, is without a doubt my favorite. I love this movie and its fast-paced dialogue, and I have to agree, this sort of film could not be done today. Films from this era had a certain style, and I can't imagine modern actors pulling it off. The same could be said for the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers films, or the Marx Brothers. Max is one of his favorites.
Yeah. Yep.
Series of movies.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, the Marx Brothers could not exist today without being raunchy and dirty. I'm sorry, raunchier and dirtier.
Yeah. It just wouldn't work. But I got to say, I think Citizen Kane is very much a journalism movie. I mean, Charles Foster Kane is a publisher. It's about the power of the press.
He has a little bit more, but I agree.
Oh.
Continuing with Vince. They are of their time in a way that can't be updated, but if you can keep up with them, you'll have a great time, end quote. Yes, I wrote Citizen Kane is very much about journalism. Yellow journalism. Yeah. So, but great stuff as always, Vince, and a hearty avec to you. Next up, we're on Facebook with the first answer, which comes from AJ Shems. He said, quote, Spotlight. I think it tells an incredible story about one of the biggest stories to ever break and the incredible work that went into telling not only the true story, but giving the victims peace and justice they deserved. It changed Catholicism forever. Also, the cast is remarkable, and I think it's Ruffalo's best performance of his career, end quote. Have you seen it?
I have, and I agree. I think it's probably the best thing he's done.
What is the story? Is it what I think it is?
Yeah, it's about the child molesting scandal in the Boston Archdiocese. Yeah.
Look over there! Is that the Winged Victory of Samothrace?
Hold on, Indian Head Penny!
Yeah. Well, I don't know it, but thanks, AJ. Tony Kellner offered, quote, Spotlight, powerful acting and an in-depth recent history lesson. If we can name TV shows, then Kolchak, the Night Stalker. And you know, the Superman movies could qualify, end quote. Kolchak, that's journalism.
Kolchak, absolutely.
Yeah.
Journalism at its finest.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Nick Hoffman sent, quote, I have two, a drama and a comedy. All the President's Men, because I lived that. Yeah. Wait, what? He was responsible for the tapes? No, wait.
I knew it!
He says...
I knew it! He was Rosemary, the secretary.
Could be.
No, Rosemary, I can't remember her last name, but yeah, she was.
He continues, I delivered that paper. Redford and Hoffman are terrific, so is Jason Robards as Ben Bradley. And the narrative is so deep into the journalistic feel. The ending is spectacular. Well, in that we got rid of Nixon. The front page with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon, screwball comedy at its best, end quote. Oh, two great choices. Thanks, Nick. Dave. Posted, quote.
Sorry, it's so catchy.
I know. I like The Insider. Journalists blowing up a big story is always fun, and I'm a huge Russell Crowe fan. He nailed it in that movie. On the Japan side, I enjoy the journalism in Japan Sinks. I had no expectation for the series, but it does a nice job of presenting Japanese politics and corruption and journalists trying to fight the corruption. One of the best-selling novels of the 70s in Japan, it has been turned into movies and TV shows many times. The version on Netflix, or was it Amazon Prime, works well for me, end quote. Ah, Russell Crowe. He throws phones, doesn't he? I hear he acts as well.
Yes, he does.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Have you seen Insider? I don't know that one either.
I don't think I have. I have some vague memory of it, but I think I'm thinking of another movie.
Mm. Harry McCracken said, quote, Funny Face with Audrey Hepburn, Fred Astaire, and the lady who wrote the Eloise books because it's an entertaining musical that makes the magazine business look glamorous.
Also, that's true.
September issue, a documentary about Vogue, which I think is the magazine the one in Funny Face is inspired by. But basically, I like all movies about journalism, end quote. Ooh, didn't expect a musical, and I like September issue as well, so thanks, Harry. Yeah. You ever seen September issue? Probably not.
I have not. Don't
so,
know
So, do you ever see The Devil Wears Prada?
Sure.
So the movie, the woman who's in that, that's not really Meryl Streep.
That's not Anna Wintour?
No, but it is in September issue. They actually show what goes into making that big, that's the big issue.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The big September issue. Okay.
Yeah. And it actually has Anna Wintour in it. I'm sorry. Hmm. Dame Anna Wintour.
Oh, is she a dame?
Oh, yes, she is.
Oh, nothing like a dame.
Steve Kellner. No.
No.
Not like that. Steve Kellner sent, quote, I'm a big fan of Spotlight, and I saw All the President's Men back when it came out. Of course, I have to call out Seth Meyers' newspaper movie, end quote. Spotlight again. I haven't heard of newspaper movie.
Don't know it.
Seth Meyers?
Seth Meyers. Really? Weird. Okay.
Thanks, Steve. Jess Miller answered, quote, Almost Famous. The music, the story, all of it is a blast, end quote. And we did that one way back, and I remember liking it too.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, that works perfectly.
Yeah, although, does he ever get his story printed?
Yeah, he does.
Okay.
He gets in a lot of trouble for it because they deny everything at first, but yeah.
Right. Oh, that's right, because drug use and rock and roll. No!
No!
Yeah. Charles Forsyth posted, quote, Anchorman, because its fearless absurdity and brilliant improv made it iconic. But since current events make me feel like I am mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, I should also add Network to the list, end quote.
Yeah, that works.
And so you have. Thanks, Charles. Ting! Tony Merrill's answer went, quote, All the President's Men, very long-time Washington Post reporter Bob Levy, whom I have photographed several times, said the movie was incredibly accurate to what actually happened, end quote. Oh, somebody's rubbing
That's
elbows.
That's rare. Wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Thanks, Tony. Roland Hardy seconds Tony Kellner's answer with, quote, The Night Stalker was a good one. Well, end quote. Mm. Thank you, Roland. It's, yeah. Lots of journalism. Richard Tatum wrote, quote, Flipside Network dealt with the death of journalism at the hands of executives and ratings. Likewise, Broadcast News in a more gruesome and sensational way, ditto Nightcrawler, end quote. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
That's Bamf?
it's a Jake Gyllenhaal as like a sleazy paparazzo.
Oh.
I think he like photographs accidents and tragedies.
Yeah, sure.
Pretty creepy.
Three for one. Well, thanks, Richard. Brian Mundo, wait, how is he going to work Fifth Element into this? Well, anyway, he said his quote, Ruby Rod is a media personality. Okay. Does that count? Okay.
No, he's not a journalist.
Sure he is.
Well,
he does interviews.
So.
If not, then the original Superman, because technically he works for the Daily Planet, and I like superheroes, end quote. You made it work.
I mean,
thanks.
A mild-mannered reporter for a major metropolitan newspaper.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Lastly, well, before Max, we have Jordan Symphony. Wait, I'm sorry. What? Doris Hempelmeyer. How did that get in here?
Because her name is a symphony.
Sure. And she sends all sorts of heavy breathing Max's way. Let's listen.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question. It's an interesting one. I had to stop and think about all the different movies. Of course, His Girl Friday is one of my very favorite movies, so that's got to be on my list. I'm going to throw out a couple of other ones there that people may not think of. One is It Happened One Night with Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable. He chases around this rich girl. There's a lot of funny things ensue. It's a good movie. Check it out if you haven't seen it. That's one. And the other one is Almost Famous. People may not think of that as a journalist movie, but I mean, that's exactly why he's on the bus with all them rock stars. So I'm going to go with those guys. I think it may be Roman Holiday, too, but I can't remember if he's actually a reporter. I think he is. But anyway, those are my answers. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I look forward to hearing next week's episode. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Oh, another threefer.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I would not have thought of Almost Famous, but again, that works. It happened one night. Technically, yeah, that is true. I mean, Clark Gable is he's a gossip reporter. I never think of that, though. It's always sort of in the background.
There's going to be one of those things where I say, you know, I've never seen It Happen One Night, and Max will counter with, we did it on the show.
Yes, we did. We did.
How did I know? I really liked that movie.
Yes, yes, you did.
Let me go back and listen real quick. Yes, I did. Good. Good for me. Well, thanks, Jordan. I mean, Doris. Yeah. How about you, Max? What is your favorite journalism or journalist movie?
Oh, boy. I mean, All the President's Men, I got to go along with the crowd with that one. But I really like Broadcast News. I'm there with Richard.
Yep.
And there's a one that I don't know why, but it really appealed to me. It's called Live from Baghdad.
Oh.
And it's like Michael Keaton and Helena Bargain Carter.
Helena Bargain Basement. Yeah. Which is mean.
Yeah.
Perfectly fine actor. I don't care for her, but she's a perfectly fine actor. I also don't care for her husband, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. They're both really good in it. And it's basically about how CNN was this tiny nowhere news station.
Who now?
Everyone thought was, you know, just a joke until the first Iraq war. And when they were the ones who had reporters on the ground there.
Oh.
Ew. Yeah. And it's about them being in Baghdad during Desert Storm.
Ew.
I thought it was really well done.
Cool.
What about you? What's your favorite journalistic movie?
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and side with Vince. Citizen Kane. If that's not about journalism, I don't know what is. It's not about reporting, but...
no, but it's definitely about journalism.
Yeah. I also really like All the President's Men, which... Did we do that for the show? I don't remember.
I don't think we did. No.
I know I've seen it, and I know I liked it. So that's... And of course, you know, we've got Robert Redford and his glowing eyes and his
orchestra.
Amazing hair. And Dustin Hoffman, and they're both very good. But I'm going to throw a third one in there that you could say it's not journalism, but to be fair, the story starts with a journalist going to cover an event, and that is Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I didn't think, I thought he wasn't a journalist.
He works for a magazine.
Publicist from the book company.
Okay. No, he was a magazine reporter or columnist, and he was sent down to cover this party. And that's where everything starts.
Okay.
But I know it's problematic because it has that man in it. But I really like that film. I know folks who've been or had been to Savannah and said that not only is it very much like that, but they went and saw the shows that had, I can't remember her name, Chablis, the Madame Chablis.
Oh, Madame Chablis. Okay.
And apparently she is exactly the way you see her in the or she
well,
was,
good.
I should say. So, yeah. But as usual, you've given us great answers, which must be why we keep asking you for more. And this week, we'd like to know. Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite foreign actor and why? Mm. This means non-USA actor, and they could be from anywhere, even that place.
That place.
You know. Mm. That place. It knows what it did. As for answering, we'll go over that at the end of the show. But Max, I'd really like to know. Seen anything good? So Max, have you?
This week, not really, no. I mean, TV stuff. I started watching the new season of Ted Lasso.
Oh, have you? I haven't heard anything about it.
I'm enjoying it. I've watched the first two. I'm liking it.
Oh, good. Because I'm worried.
Nice mix of the classic characters and new characters.
Yeah.
We'll see how well it holds up.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. I haven't seen any movies other than this one. Hmm. You know, Purple Noon. What about you? Seen anything good?
Well, I started watching Batman Caped Crusader. It's a far more violent and somewhat alternate version of Batman the Animated Series. We have some gender swapping, some reinterpretation of characters, but still that great Art Deco-inspired aesthetic. It is, in some ways, it is Batman, but it is different. And again, it is much more violent than the original was, because I guess it's because it's on streaming, it's on Prime. So they can do whatever they want and don't have to worry about censors. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also.
Yeah, no, I watched the first season of that. I haven't seen the second.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a second.
I liked it.
Yeah. Also, on YouTube, I've discovered the documentaries of a channel called Matt with four T's. He's not only reignited my interest in comics, I pretty much want to read everything he covers at the end of each video. And he's not just covering, like, he actually mostly doesn't cover superheroes. And he has got a passion for comics as a medium that I have rarely seen well projected.
Wow.
And I've just watched all of his documentaries. There's lots of cool stuff on there. Some stuff from people you've heard of, some stuff from people you haven't, because I got out of the comics industry in 98, more or less. But now I'm like, there's a whole stack of stuff I want to read. So Matt with four, just M-A-T-T-T-T. And lots of good stuff, documentaries about comics and comic makers.
That sounds very cool.
Yeah, check him out. But it's about time, I should say. Well, it is about time we got back to the French. And this week's movie, Purple Noon.
The facts.
Budget.
Purple Noon.
Stop
purple
that. You did it last week. No.
I only want to see you laughing in the Purple Noon.
Le Fierd. Le Fierd. Anyway.
Le Prince. Le Prince.
If you do not stop, I will do the entire episode like this. Bouge. The budget. We're looking at 1960s money here. $618,000. Wow. They get a lot for their money.
It's, I mean, you can see it on the screen, but okay.
But did it pay off? It brought in almost 2.5 million, and that was just in France.
Zut alors. Well, wait, was that $2 million or
yes.
2 million kabukis or whatever money the French use?
Well, they use francs. Now they use euros.
Don't be silly. They serve those with beans.
But we'll get back to this. The lira in Italy. Each bill is the size of a book.
I had my notes like, what is he getting? A bunch of placemats? Oh, that's money.
Yeah. And you notice how there's always, you never just get a bill. You always get stacks of them because lira are worth so much. Yeah. Anyway, we might as well get to this right here. The film is adapted from a book by author Patricia Highsmith. And that book has a somewhat different ending than does the movie. Spoilers here, but in the book, Tom gets away with it. There was there was more than likely pressure from censors, which were still a big deal back in 1960. I can tell you, Bob. I mean, Max. Marie Lefoy, who plays Marge, not Simpson, says she wished she hadn't taken this part as she felt she was too young to do it justice. Well, we'll see if we agree with her. When Philippe offers to buy the white cane from the blind man, what he's offering was about $32 in 1960 money, or about $320 bucks today. Speaking of money, Tom Ripley commits all these crimes so he can get his hands on about 165,000 kabukis in today's money. Yeah. Doesn't seem like that much, does it?
Yeah, not really. I want 10 million lira.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, back then that was about $16,000.
Yeah, so it's... And last bit about the cash. Tom's supposed to receive $5,000 from Philippe's dad for bringing him home. That would be about $55,000 in today's dollars, which is...
That's not chump change.
I mean, it's not even a great year's salary, honestly, Sally, these days. Yeah, that sailboat, the Marge, was a 60-foot Bermuda-rigged cutter sloop, for those keeping score at home.
I knew it was a Bermuda.
She's a beaut, ain't she? Or is it... Yar. She was very yar.
She's very yar.
Yeah.
Yarr!
This was not the last adaptation of Mrs. Highsmith's novel. No. Next would be done in 1999 and would star Matt Damon!
Matt Damon!
Gwyneth Paltrow and Jude Law, among others. Did you ever see that one?
I did.
Yeah.
I remember almost nothing about it.
I remember more about it from watching this film than I did that one.
Yeah.
Although translated as Purple Noon, a better version of the original French title would read Broad Daylight. Don't ask me where the purple comes from. This is one of Akira Kurosawa's top 100 films.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
The director, Clément, was near the end of his career, and this movie was somewhat badly timed for him, as this was also the beginning of the French New Wave, with directors Truffaut and Godard rejecting the more traditional directors like Clément. In fact, they called the older type movies cinema papa or dad's movies.
Ooh, ouch!
Yeah. But, so
basically, they had serious unk vibes. see, I used a hip term. I'm hip.
No, Clément would have the unk vibes, but we'll just skip
that part. Yeah, that's what you said. That's they, what I meant.
So that would be
The old cinema. Shut up.
Do you know any trivia about the movie before I go to the Criterion Collection trivia?
Nope, not really.
All right, well, so a little bit more about the Criterion Collection. People wonder how Criterion chooses the movies that are added to its prestigious collection.
Well, I know I do.
I went right to the source for the answer. Quote, "We aim to reflect the breadth of filmed expression. We try not to be restrictive or snobby about what kind of films are appropriate. An auteur classic, a Hollywood blockbuster, and an independent B-horror film all have to be taken on their own terms. All we ask is that each film in the collection be an exemplary film of its kind. Of course, we can't just pick movies and put them out. The process of getting the rights to release a film can take years. Even if we want a film, we can't work on it unless the film's owners grant us the rights to do so," end quote. And that certainly explains The Blob and Godzilla vs. Biollante.
Yeah.
But in general, I would say that that's probably true. But since Max has no other information and we're going to let him do some more Criteria stuff next week, let's get to Le Plotte. Tom Ripley has been sent to Italy to find his old school chum Philippe Greenleaf by his dad. See, dad wants Philippe back in San Francisco for reasons, and he's willing to pay Tom 5,000 1960s bucks to get him. But Philippe's really not interested. See, he's a playboy with lots of cash, a hot fiancé, and well, it's 1960s Italy. You can have dinner and sex for a lira, so why not do that? When Marge, the fiancée, shows up, it's kind of a two's company, three's a crowd. But see, Tom has really grown to like this millionaire playboy lifestyle, and he's not sure that even if he could get Philippe back to his dad, 5,000 bucks is going to make him happy. When Philippe pisses Marge off and drops her at somewhere amazing in Italy, it's just him and Tom on the boat. Philippe's caught Tom not only stealing his bank statements, but trying on his clothes. "You'll never be one of us," he says. "Oh yeah," counters Tom, who then kills Philippe and tosses him off the boat. From there, he more or less takes Philippe's place, first convincing Marge that her beau wants to break it off forever. And then, when Tom's caught by Philippe's friend Freddy and kills him, he tries to convince people that Philippe killed Freddy and then killed himself. "Oh, but Marge, here's all my money before I go off to a better place," signed Really Philippe. Thing is, except for one slightly suspicious police inspector, it looks like smooth sailing for Tom. That is, until the yacht is being inspected for sale. Seems Philippe's body didn't quite get washed away. It got tangled up in the propeller, and ew! Yeah. Looks like Tom's about to be caught. The end.
The film.
So, Maxwell. Mm. Have you heard of Purple Noon before this show that we are doing?
Monsieur Michel. Yes, I actually have seen this movie.
You had seen it before?
I had.
Really? Where did you see this? And why?
Believe it or not, my mother showed it to me on videotape.
Interesting.
Yeah, she said, "This is a really good movie. This is a really interesting movie. Check it out." I remember finding it really weird and kind of creepy, but I was pretty young when I saw it. I think I was probably too young.
I don't know how weird it is, but we'll get to the creepy part.
Yeah.
Because there's creepy in this film, as there should be. But
also, I was not used to French films, and the French film pacing is very different than American.
You could say it is slower.
It is languid.
Yeah.
It is unhurried.
Yeah.
It is, we didn't have time for 2 cups of coffee and 8 cigarettes.
And the croissant.
Mm-mm-mm. And the croissant.
I do like the croissant. Mm. Let's get to the acting now. I'm not going to go too deep into this because quite honestly, yeah, there's a fairly small number of characters that have any real screen time. And then a lot of other Frenchies. This is apparently the first starring role for our main character, Alain Delon. And quite honestly, I can totally see why he became a French superstar actor. Yeah. Oh, is he purdy.
I gotta say, I'm looking at him going, you know what? I'd make out with him. Holy God, he's beautiful.
Yeah, but also, he's really good, and we knew this from La Samurai, because I really like him in that film, too. I don't know how many movies he made, but he is apparently like their Robert Redford or Paul Newman or somebody like that. But except, well, no, because most of those guys can also really act, so I don't want to diminish their accomplishments.
But he's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a terrific actor. It's amazing he can actually make Ripley, who is, let's face it, a sociopath.
By definition.
But we're still invested in him. I still want to know what's going to happen. I still like, oh no, he's falling overboard. How's he going to get out?
Yeah, and I do want to come back to that particular part of the film. But Alain Delon, I mean, even in that we don't speak his language, he's terrific. He's got this real mix of kind of best friend, slightly puppy, and then when it comes time, really quite creepy.
Dead-eyed killer. Yeah.
Like, he's the worst kind of sociopath. The one that knows he's a sociopath and knows how to charm people into not knowing he's a sociopath.
What they call a high-functioning sociopath. A sociopath who has learned how to behave like a normal person.
Yeah. Which, of course, is the center of the whole story, whether it's the Matt Damon one or this one. Then we have Maurice Rene, who plays Philippe Greenleaf.
Legolas Greenleaf.
Yep. No.
And the same last name. I think they're related.
Sure. He is also very, very good. He is kind of perfect at playing that rich guy who doesn't care about anybody else except himself and his good time. And is quite honestly somewhat loathsome. Like, this is not
God. What do you mean somewhat? He's horrible. He's a complete jackass. The way he treats Marge, the way he treats Ripley, the way he treats everybody. He's awful.
The thing about the way he treats Ripley, it's, let's face it, he knows why Ripley was sent there. He was sent there to bring him home to dad in San Francisco, which he doesn't want to do. But also at one point when he's talking just to Marge and she's like, how can you treat your old friend that way? And he's like, look, he made that up. I barely know the guy. So it's like that whole thing about him saving his life and stuff is probably not even true. So
probably.
Yes, he is a loathsome character. But
he is very charismatic. And you can understand why he has all these friends. He's very charming when he wants to be.
Well, and that woman they pick up together on the streets of Italy, wherever they are. I forget which
city.
Were they in Rome at that point? Yeah.
It was the other place that began with an M.
We'll come back to Italy because we're definitely coming back to Italy. But yeah, he does a great job. Again, it doesn't really matter that it's French. I had no problem like reading the subtitles and understanding his emotions or what he was going for. The saddest part in a way is that we realize he thinks he's playing Ripley and he isn't.
No, so, he's not.
But also, I think it's also not, it's fair to say, I think that Ripley isn't initially thinking about killing him, but it becomes more and more obvious to him. And it literally is just like, should I wear socks or not? Maybe
Ripley,
not.
One of the things that strikes me about Ripley, and we'll get to this again, he's a brilliant tactician. He's not much of a strategist.
No,
he's really good. He's really good at dealing with stuff in the moment and in the short term, but he has no his long-term plans don't make any sense.
No, and we'll definitely come back to that. Marie Laforêt. I disagree with her assessment. I think she does fine as Marge Duval, although that Malge, really?
Yeah.
That just catches in your... Oh, no offense to people named Marge, but why not Camille or Marie or... I don't know her name.
Oh, and those eyes. I looked it up. You know, she was known as the girl with the golden eyes because she has these really gorgeous golden green eyes. I've never seen them before, like anything like that before.
No, Monsieur Ripley, I expect you to die.
Okay.
that's the wrong movie. That's not Golden Eye.
No, well, Golden Eyes, Golden Finger, same thing.
Okay. I think Invincible.
I think she's a really also a mix of that rich persona that enjoys their wealth and doesn't really care about lesser people. But also she's got some smarts to her. She's writing this book, or she's trying to write this book on Frangelico and his art and so on and so forth.
Oh, and not the liqueur?
I mean, it's not really worth that. I don't care for Frangelico myself, but there you go. So she's at least trying to do something, although it's also one of those projects you can tell it's like, well, I am le bored. I think I will write this very famous book about this famous guy, and I have all this money to get it published, so who cares? So, but she's also a real person, and we can understand, sadly, why she's attracted to Philippe and why she feels it's probably her first major love, and he's supposedly her fiancé, and he's terrible to her.
Yeah, so, he treats her like crap.
I'm going to throw in Billy Kearns, who apparently is an American. I did not know this. He's an expat
American. I thought he was because his French accent was weird. And at one point he speaks English and you can hear the American accent. It's just somebody's name. But yeah, I figured he was American.
He's fine. I think he plays a very interesting role in that he's the one that doesn't like Tom from the start. And then later on becomes a bit of gum in the cogs, as it were.
Yeah.
And
so, I also have to say, in my notes, I have, hey, look at that. They know the Big Bopper.
Oh, is that what he looked like?
I thought Freddie looked a lot like the Big Bopper. Oh. I kept waiting for him to go, bonjour, baby.
Ah! Ooh, sorry. I got to say, Billy Kearns plays the best dead body I have ever seen.
That was amazing. I gotta say, it's the weirdest part, but yeah, he's playing a corpse that Ripley is trying to get out to a car, and that is really hard to do. He goes into it completely, doesn't move, there's no sense of, you don't see him breathe, you don't see him sort of unconsciously trying to help.
No, he is so rubbery. It's really, really amazing. It is literally like, I will not le help. Yeah, so, and then we have, I suppose the only person you could mention after that is Inspector Ricordi, played by Erno Krisa.
Inspector Bighead.
I always follow le nose, because le nose, it always knows, the flavor of fruit.
Yes. Inspector Toucan Sam.
It's a very minor part, and he shows up just long enough to basically go, something smells le fish here. And, you know, he's not wrong. And to be fair, there's really only one person that seems to be connected to all the other stuff going on. So, you know, it's fine. And, you know, otherwise there's people acting and they're very fine. The director René Clément shows up very briefly, which I wouldn't have known otherwise, but who cares? But one of the other characters, and dear gods, I really do mourn this character's passing, is 1960s Europe. Oh, dear gods, do I want to go there?
And this movie, whatever else, and sometimes it's a little distracting, quite honestly, but you can tell Clément friggin' loves Italy.
Yeah.
And he loves where he is. And this is a love song to that part of Italy.
And it's beautiful. The Mediterranean is just this amazing blue, and there's not as many tourists, right? And there's just not as many people. Right. And they're in this little fishing village, and people are just living their lives, but it's like, oh, you are so picturesque. Oh, it's so cute. And I mourn.
And everyone is so nice and helpful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you toss them a coin or a franc here and there, or I'm sorry, a lira. Who?
A bunch of lira.
You know what I can get for a lira? A stain. That's what I can get for a lira.
And you have to give it back.
But yeah, it's a time period and a place that no longer exist, and you had to be rich to go and travel there from the States. And, you know, if you weren't rich wandering around the way you wanted to, it wasn't the same because you had to work for a living. But wow, it is so pretty. Just these little villages that are like nothing. And it's like, I would spend a whole week there. I don't care if all they do is fish. It's beautiful. I want to go there.
Yep.
So that was, I thought, one of my favorite characters was the setting. Yeah, we've got characters, and this is something that you brought up. We have these two young men, and they're both pretty horrible and pretty vapid. But we're still interested in not only what happens to them, but they're, once Tom commits his the first crime that he commits, you still kind of want him to get away with it?
Yeah, I don't know why, but you're... When he kills, sorry, spoiler, he kills Greenleaf.
Yeah.
And he throws him over the, he wraps him up, throws him over the side. He falls overboard. He gets hit by the boom.
Yeah.
Gets hit, knocked overboard. And I'm like, oh no!
Yeah.
Like, as a, not, oh good, the murderer is getting what was coming to him. It's like, no, hang on, Tom!
It'll be all right. Well, part of it is because it's Alain Delon, and it's like, oh, you cannot ruin such beauty. Bring it back. And also, I got to say, of all the photography in the film, that scene where the boat is being knocked around, the waves are heavier, is some of the most exciting photography in the film.
Yeah, it's very action-packed, considering
the rest of the film.
Filming the boat, The rest of the boat isn't.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of films that do this, but it does pop up where the main character, our protagonist, if you want, our hero, which I really don't want, is a despicable human being, in this case a murderer, and he's not like murdering, oh no, I accidentally killed this man that was beating up this woman, or
no,
oh, it's an accident. It was literally, I'm going to stab you now and take your stuff.
I have already planned how to replace you and get your money.
Yeah. And worst off, I got caught doing it. It's just Philippe thinks he's a lot smarter than Tom.
And part of it also is the people he kills Philippe and he kills Freddy, the two most obnoxious other characters in the movie.
True.
We don't, it doesn't destroy our sympathy for him. Can you answer this? I'm not entirely sure. One of the things he does is, not only does he set Philippe up as the potential murderer of Freddy,
right,
but he gives the idea that he's committed suicide, or he's about to commit suicide, and leaves all his money to Marge.
Right.
Why does he set it up so that Marge gets all the money?
All of what he wants.
Okay, so he's going to make a move on Marge and like try to, okay.
And that's where he gets really, really creepy. Because when he's like, oh, I need to see Marge after the death of... Because the parents declare him dead. Although, apparently, it only takes like a couple of days in Italy. And, oh, we can't find you. You're dead. And they start giving away his stuff. Because there's no body yet. We'll come back to that. But they're just like, oh, he's dead. And she's in mourning in his little apartment in that town whose name I can't remember either.
Yeah.
And he basically sneaks his way in, although, to be fair, everybody in town knows where the key's kept. There's this little hole next to the
door. That's the dumbest hiding place. It is this big, obvious, like the size of your face, hole in the wall right next to the door.
Oh, it's a brick missing. That's what it is. It is a brick missing.
It's not a brick. It's a piece of the wall. It's not a brick wall. It's stone. There's a huge hunk of it missing, and it's really friggin' obvious.
Yeah. In fact, if you've ever sat in the cafe across the street at some point, you've seen somebody stick their hand in the hole, pull the key out, and go in. So, whatever. But he waits until the maid has gone out, and then he takes the key and goes in. And the scenes of him sneaking up on poor Marge while she's asleep, and then kissing her on the lips! So it's not even like a gentle friend's kiss, it's a predatory thing.
He also talks to her in Philippe's voice.
Yes.
Which he apparently is really good at imitating. That part I couldn't really tell.
Oh, the phone's back then, like, it's fine.
Yeah. But that is just so creepy and manipulative.
Well, and you will not only agree with this, but you will also hold up on my idea that identity theft in the 60s was a lot easier than it is today.
Oh, boy, was it. I'll just practice the signature and change my hair. There.
I have to say, I thought his way of learning the signature was actually pretty interesting.
That was clever.
He bought an overhead opaque projector, had a copy of the actual signature, projected it on the wall, and then just starts tracing it with his hand. And he's not learning the signature. What he's learning is the rhythm of the marks.
Because that is the mistake that bad forgers make. They try to just trace a signature and they forget. You never sign the same thing exactly the same way twice.
Right.
But you have to actually get in the person's head and figure out how their signature works.
Right.
So that you can recreate it. And there are people who are terrifyingly good at it.
Listen to the rhythm.
So I thought that was, and when he actually does it, when we see him do it in the bank, the guy at the bank, I think it's literally because, hello, give me $1 million, please. It's from my account. And the guy quite honestly is suspicious, like he should be. And he's looking at the signature and he's like, well, all right, that's okay. I guess it looks like him in the passport.
Picture looks like him.
Mm-hmm. And they're basically like, it's him. That's all we have is a signature and a passport. It has to be him.
That's all we need. Yep.
Yep. I didn't understand the little putty that he used to get the stamp. And
that was silly putty. That was, in fact, that is the forger's friend. It picked up the imprint of the official seal from the passport. Because that seal always leaves this sort of ghost print on the person's picture. So he duplicated it. He couldn't get a hold of the actual seal. That's really hard to do.
I would have thought that like him poking the photo would just have flattened out the silly putty.
No, he actually just used enough of it and enough pressure to transfer the image enough.
And also, quite honestly, the photo looks like somebody licked the back of it and pressed it against the passport, and that's all that was holding it there. So
the passports back then weren't that high tech. They were just this size of, just this side of a paperback. It's like, here, staple your picture here, sign this, there you go. Here's a number.
I love it when we watch old noir films and we get to see somebody's license and there's not even a photo on it. It's literally just a name typed out. It's like, no, it's this guy. No, really. This is ID, a card that has your name typed on it. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no signature, nothing.
So we see him steal the identity of Philippe. And this is something I thought was interesting, and I'm not sure if it was done on purpose. But in the beginning of the film, where they are actually rich friends going around spending money, we don't see a lot of everyday people, not nearly so many. And in fact, the streets are remarkably empty, which makes me want to go there all the more. Not just to Italy, but to 1960s Italy.
Yeah.
Not only because if I have the money I have now and I could go back then.
Oh, yeah, you'd be a friggin' billionaire. Yeah.
So I noticed that once Tom has killed Philippe, we start seeing him having to deal a lot more with the average everyday person, and we see a lot more of those people. Like, I have to pay the guy to pull my boat in. Okay, we did see that earlier before, but now we see him going through the market, and he's looking at fish and stuff. Oh, here's these guys that are helping, move luggage into taxis and all this stuff. And it seemed to me that I wondered if the director was trying to suggest that while he was in the rich lifestyle, he really hadn't left his origins behind. He's still connected visually, at least to us, for that. Did you get any impression of that?
A little bit, but one of the things about Ripley is he's a complete cipher. We have no idea what his background is, what his past is. We assume he didn't come from money. We don't know that. He could be disgraced. He could have been cut off.
I think it's fair to say that he probably did not come from money. Certainly not the kind of money that is supposed to be in this film. So, him wanting that, I can totally see that. That's the motivation. I want to be like that. And let's face it, if you just show up with a buddy that's got a lot of money and he's tossing it around like it's nothing and you get to do all these cool things and not care about stuff, greed's a pretty big motivator, and it shows up in a lot of stories because it's real. So
I got another one. Where is he from?
We don't know.
We have no idea. Ripley is not a French name.
No, neither is Greenleaf.
Yeah, true. But Greenleaf could be a translation.
Yeah, but Ripley's not an English because name. Everyone uses that as Greenleaf in the film. Now, to be fair, I'm not sure in the original book if they were supposed to be American or what. Because I think in the updated version, they were American. Well, it was Jude Law. Jude Law can be from wherever he wants. I don't care.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, they should switch those parts because I think Jude Law is better looking than Matt Damon, but that's just me.
Matt Damon!
I know that they changed Marge's last name from something else to Duval to make her more French, so it might very well be that they are American names and they just decided not to switch them.
Maybe.
But if they were American, it does not explain why they're in Italy speaking French.
So, I mean, Marge, I completely believe is French. Yeah. Probably Philippe also, if only because his first name is Philippe.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tom, that's the whole thing. He is a nothing. He has no past.
Well, I mean, we don't know any more about Philippe either. We know he's got a dad who's got money. That's all we know.
His family's in San Francisco. His family's rich. He likes boats. Yeah, we don't know much more about him than that.
In San Francisco.
Yep.
High on a hill. He calls to me. $5,000. Oh. Sure.
What did you think of the editing and the pacing of this movie in general?
The editing I have no real comment on because it just seemed to flow. And of course, the cinematography is so gorgeous. I mean, there are some shots, especially establishing shots. It's like, that's a painting. That's a painting. That's like, I could almost start identifying as the guy I know who painted. That's a Monet. That's you know what I mean? The pacing, as you pointed out, it's a French movie and they're in no hurry. I say about halfway through the film, it slows down. But when things start to go wrong is when the speed starts to pick up again. What did you think of the pacing?
Most of it I thought was really good, and the editing, except a couple of points. A couple of the scenes chop off very suddenly.
Like which ones? Do you remember?
Which threw me. Yes, like the one with his landlady. When the police come by, she comes up, they're looking around, and suddenly we cut to something else, and we never hear anything more about it.
Is this when with the big apartment or the little cheap
one? Yeah, the big one.
I think that's when he crawls out the window, isn't it?
No, that's when they come back.
Oh, okay. The other thing that gets me,
there are two sequences in this that kind of threw me. I kind of enjoyed them, but I don't know. One is when he's walking through the fish market.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, okay, I've just committed murder. I've stolen all this stuff. Let's watch some fish. Okay. I mean, I think it was, it's an establishing of where he is.
Yeah.
All I could think was, is this like supposed to be, he's the fisherman and he's got his prey, or...
I just thought it was literally, hey, I'm on my own and I get to decide what I want for a change. And I'm going to sample all this stuff and not buy any of it because that's what rich people do. They sample things and don't buy things. So I don't know. It just seemed to me like he was him trying on the role. And he was trying with people he knew and understood. But other than that, I didn't think twice about it. No.
Yeah, that and the Festival of the Saint. He's walking around and the fireworks are going off and... They're carrying Saint someone or other through the streets.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, why are we lingering on that? I mean, admittedly, visually, it's very cool. I don't object to either of them, but it seemed a little out of place.
Could it, in fact, have been a visual metaphor for oncoming justice?
Maybe.
Which
maybe
is not in the book. Yeah, in the book, apparently, I forget where the money actually goes. I think it actually, the money ends up going to Ripley himself instead of Marge. And he literally, like, that's it. He gets away with it. Like, there's no repercussions. I don't think he ends up with Marge, but don't quote me on that. I think he just literally gets the money and leaves.
What did you think? What did you think of that part of do you want to talk about the ending?
Yeah, why not? We got a little time.
We don't really know what happens.
Oh, we know what happens.
we know what we think happens, but we don't see it. He's, I'm here with a drink. I've gotten away with everything. And then the cops show up and go, could you tell him to come over here, please?
Yeah.
And he gets up, he walks, and the screen goes black, and we get 2 minutes of just music and a black screen.
I had no problem with the ending at all. I thought it was very clear-cut and very well stated. It's like, so the body of Philippe was wrapped in a sailcloth, and there was a wire or cable that was attached to it that he let it go out behind the boat at high speeds in the middle of the Mediterranean. And let go, and it was actually there's an anchor tied in there, which quite honestly wasn't that heavy because he could lift it. But anyway, it lets go, and we see Philippe sink beneath the waves. Well, it turns out that Philippe sank beneath the waves, but the cable got stuck in the propeller. How he got? I guess he used the wind.
It got stuck in the rudder.
No, it was wrapped around the propeller. But here's the thing: he would have just sailed into shore, so why would he care? Yeah. He would never have used it. So there's a bit of the plot where he's talking about selling the boat just for the money because he doesn't care. And it's worth a fair amount of money, as well it should be, because it is a gorgeous boat.
It's a nice boat.
And they pull up the boat and we see the cable and I'm like, And sure enough, they pull it out and they have this really icky, a lot of the skin and stuff's been et and like it's not in good shape, hands sticking out, and there's thankfully a scream, as there should be. And they're like, all right, so we know that Philippe has supposedly been around and supposedly Tom has spoken to him. Well, how is that possible when it's obvious that he's been dead for quite some time? So they got the goods. They've got him. As far as I'm concerned, it's very clear cut. I'm sure, it was in the trivia. It was the censors going, you can't have the bad guy win. We don't do
the bad guy has to get caught. Yep.
What did you think? Because obviously you brought it up. Maybe you had a trouble with it.
To me, that part felt a little tacked on. I thought it was just going to end with him sitting there saying the best of everything. The whole get me the FBI thing, that felt a tad American.
Did you read the book before, or have you read the book?
No, I've never read the book.
Did you know the original ending?
Yeah, because they used that in the Matt Damon one.
I thought you forgot most of it. I didn't remember
that. I forgot. I remember the ending. I remember comparing them in my head going, oh, wait a sec. I thought he got away.
Yeah. I remember the film well enough, and I remember it being really, seeming really creepy. And Matt Damon, who is quite honestly very good at being charming, and it looked like, from what I remember, he was also really good at being creepy. So,
yeah, he can be.
Yeah, probably a good choice. So yeah, I didn't have a problem with the end. It was fine. It really didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I liked it. I like the fact that this is not like an American movie that hands us the end.
No.
It's like, okay, we're going to let you figure out what's going to happen now.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. I would like to give a quick shout out to the matron friend of Philippe's, because she pretty much comes right out and says, I was bored astride the grave. I mean,
she basically is a walking Sartre quote machine.
Yeah. But also, you talked about this a little earlier, so we get back to it, that you said that Tom is very good at tactics, but not so great at strategy. Yeah. First off, I had to wonder, why don't you just leave Europe?
Yeah, why is he staying there?
I mean, to be fair, I get it, right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's Europe in 1960.
But Paris in 1960 is probably nice. He could have gone there.
But he doesn't, he stays pretty much in the same area.
He's either in Rome or that little town, which I don't think actually exists.
It's made of fish, that's all we know. It means in Italian, made of fish.
Fishville.
It's the kookiest. Anyway, I also had one word that I wanted, that I did scream at the movie, and I'm sure that you will agree with me if I scream this word. Fingerprints! Yeah. It's like, seriously, dude.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yep. He doesn't wipe off the statue he kills Freddy with. He doesn't. No. Yep.
No.
And yes, they had fingerprint technology for many decades at this point.
Even Inspector Clouseau checks for fingerprints.
Yeah, they're usually his, but yeah. Yeah.
But, I'm getting to the end of my notes here. How about you? Got anything left before we, because we're getting towards that point.
One thing I thought was interesting, and they make nothing out of it, when he kills Philippe, and Philippe's body is on the boat, he's very matter-of-fact about how he's dealing with it. He keeps covering the face.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that with Freddy.
Well, he's sort of behind Freddy. He can't see him.
No, but that's the thing. When Freddy's body, this always also struck me as incredibly creepy and effective. Freddy's body is lying there in his apartment, and he is baking a nice chicken and having a nice dinner in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But he isn't concerned with hiding Freddy's face from himself, because he doesn't seem to feel any guilt. I wondered if that was supposed to be because he maybe felt a little bit of guilt about killing Philippe.
Could be, because he didn't like Freddy. Because Freddy didn't like him.
No, not at all.
Yeah, but God, that scene. It's like, I remember. It's like, and how are you going to get that out of the apartment? Oh, you're going to pick it up by yourself. This should be fun. Yeah. And it is fun in a way, because it's like Weekend at Bernie's. But Bernie's a lot less helpful in this case, but sure. You know what else also is helpful is when we get to that point of the show where we ask...
The finish.
Hey, Max.
Yeah?
What'd you think of Purple Noon?
Très bon. Very nice. I told them we already got one. No, I like it. I think it's really well done. I don't think I appreciated it enough the first time I saw it. I think I was too young for it. And also, I was, raised on a diet of American movies, and this seemed glacial.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot more French movies now, and the pace is much nicer. It brings you along. It lets things sink in.
I see what you did there. Sink in. He says because the body sinks in.
It's the thing with the thinking, but it's not really. Yes. Yeah, I think it's really, I like it. I think it's beautifully done. I Alain Delon is making me question things about myself. I should not have to question after all these years.
He is very
pretty. About you? What about, this was the first time you saw it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What'd you think? But you had seen the Matt Damon one.
I had seen the Matt Damon one. I don't remember if I liked it or not. I think it's one of those cases where it's like, well, I don't like anybody in the film and he gets away with it. So I think it's a really good film. I think that if you are of the more modern persuasion, meaning that you tend to like your films a little faster and furiouser, that this is not going to work.
Family!
God. We care about family because we screamed it at you.
Yep.
It is very slow paced in general. It is absolutely gorgeous to look at. I just really, really wish I had been in Europe. I mean, we were in there in 1985, and even 85 was prettier than it is now. Just because there's so fewer tourists, like honestly, there's and fewer people in general. It just, if everything feels crowded and hot. Although, you know, quite honestly, I was in London in May. That's a good time to go. Don't go in the summer. They don't have air conditioning.
Oh, okay.
But no, May, I mean, occasionally at rush hour, the tube was crowded, but like, that's, I'm sure that's all year round, but no problem getting around, getting tickets for shows and stuff in May. So, but yeah, it's a gorgeous looking film. Alain Delon, besides being really pretty, is a really good actor. Actually, all the acting in here is, as far as we can tell, really good. Yeah. I have no problem reading subtitles. It doesn't bother me. And I would not want to watch this dubbed. Blah. I didn't know if they have a dubbed copy of this.
I'm sure they have. Hey, that's right. Oh, thank you, murdered Philippe Greenleaf.
No, it couldn't have been me. I only know four types of kung fu. That's all we need is those weird Australian voiceover artists. That
the Shaw Brothers.
Thanks. Yeah. So, yeah, would I recommend it to today's audience? That's a toughie. If you like art house films, if you like slower paced films, if you want to see a beautiful film from Europe in the 1960s, yeah, definitely. And if you don't know anything about Alain Delon, what I'll just say, I'm sure he's got tons of films. Watch this and then watch Le Samurai, which is also slowly paced, but we both really liked.
Yeah,
those French might know a thing or two about movies.
Could be.
So,
could be.
It is not for everybody, but I also can totally see why the Criterion Collection would pick this. Or to be fair, probably Janus Films back in the day brought this over and showed it at the Brattle. And they had another theater in 59th Street in New York. But I can totally see why they would pick this film. Even if it was by a papa, a cinema papa, as it were. It's
mine papa.
I still thought it was actually really good. And it passed the P-test, which is the most important thing. But you know what else passes the P-test? Our poll question, because it's got a P in it.
P in it.
Yeah. We would like to know, who is your favorite foreign actor and why? So this means somebody that was not born in the States. If they live here now, that's fine. We don't care. Mm-hmm. But they could be from anywhere. Pick a country, any country, even that planet. But how would you answer this question you might like to know? Well, let's tell you. First, you could email us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. We'd love to hear from you. Answer the poll question. Give us ideas for shows. Give us ideas for series. We love to hear both. Also, you can go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, which has all of our episodes, and they're all separate. Do use the search. We do it all the time because I don't know about Max, but I forget movies we've done.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And find out, hey, I have a favorite film. Have they covered it? The answer at this point is probably yes, because we've done almost 400 of these. So, yeah. So, website, maxmikemovies.com. If you like podcast apps, and who doesn't, you can find us on all of those because that's how that works. If you like social media, we are on Blueski and Facebook still as Max Mike Movies. But if you really want to get our attention, especially Max's, breathe heavily into the phone at 617-398-7266. That is 617-398-7266. And Jordan Talk Symphony will be waiting for you.
Talk real slow and tell me what you're wearing.
No, don't. Whatever you do. But you know what you should do, Max, is let us know what movie that's part of, it has to be part of the Criterion Collection or on the Criterion Channel. What film are we watching next week?
This is one of those movies I was kind of surprised, or I'd very surprised to find it was in the Criterion Collection. I think it's a good movie, or at least I did when I saw it. I'd see how it holds up. And this one also, well, not a lot of subtitles, but at least the first third or so has almost no dialogue.
Oh.
Except one particular word. Wally.
Wally who? Oh, Wally Womper, the head of the Worldwide Wickets Corporation. Right, right. Wally Womper.
That's him. That's him. Wally Womper. No, it's Wall-E, the Pixar movie.
About a wall?
Somehow about a wall named E.
Oh.
And his desperate dream to become a ceiling.
Wait, Wall-E's part of the Criterion Collection? Aren't they? Isn't that a Pixar
film? Yes, it is.
Huh.
It is.
And I got to say, I ain't seen it since it came out. So will it hold up?
It should be interesting.
And will Max hold up?
Will I? Or will I hold you up? Give me your money.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.